Tell me about when you found, how you found James Liao, who played Leo.
James came through a casting agent, and he was one of two people that a local casting agent in San Francisco recommended to me. And I talked to him, and he is actually the one actor out of the four, or actually there's a lot of them, but the four main people that he is, he hasn't acted as much as the other folks have. And I think he's really natural. And I tried to talk to him. I think what I did when I interviewed him, I remember, is that I talked to him about, has he ever been bullied? Has he ever, I need to tap into his hate and see if there's some hate there, because we all got hate.
We all have it.
And so I wanted to see if I could tap into his hate, and he has some of that residual, you know, obviously from his not obviously, but from his teenage years, you know. So then we tapped into it.
So obviously the way he was dressed, you know, he was buttoned up, he's kind of stiff, I guess, the way you kind of like, and then presented him, and then kind of like with all that together, kind of like he's got a channel that, you know, I'm sure he doesn't believe what he's saying, but he's channeling, like you said, he's channeling the energy, he's channeling that kind of emotion in his character, I guess, right?
Yes. And the thing is that, you know what, here's the deal, is that I fully believe, I'm from a theatrical background too, and I feel that, you know, like step by step, bit by bit, part by part, when you get to the day of filming, and there's something that is in the zeitgeist, at least for me, when you get on that median and you've got 35 protesters out there saying saying faggot on end, you know, and you're in that, you can't help feel that hate. And if that's your part, you go into it, you know. Yeah. And he did it really well. And you're right, we did it with his costume design too. We wanted something very buttoned up, something very straight laced, something, you know, Deirdre Scully, who's our great costume designer. We talked about having conservative colors, blues and you know, beiges and tans and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Conservative, because we looked at people who have been to these protests from the conservative side, and they're dressed hip, but they are also dressed very, you know, it's a very conservative look.
And so was it, I'm curious, the attention, was it always intended for the two leads to be non-white and kind of add that extra layer, or was that just done like by mistake?
The leads were never, I never had the intention of them not being a BIPOC person. I mean, I never had the intention of them being BIPOC folks, but then when I cast Cameron, and I thought of him immediately, he's Black and Latino. And then the original protesters who attacked and verbally assaulted me and my friend, and then kept on doing it,
Mormons,
back in 2008, they were Tongan Mormons, and I didn't really want to use Tongans, and I didn't know if I could find Tongan Mormons, but I wanted to not use the token white person again, you know.
Gotcha.
I want to show that hate comes in all forms, it comes in all skin tones, it comes in all cultures, and we can hate on each other like anybody does. It just, white people do it better.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, we win in that aspect. The white male wins in that aspect, I guess, right?
Sometimes we do. Yes, we do.
Okay, so you're alluding to the extras in the presentation. Like you said, you have four different scenes, you have different times of the day. This is a huge production. So tell me about the whole, like, how, where you shot it, in terms of like, how much did you take a block out of the location? Like, what was, like, it must have been a logistical nightmare for an independent film to film all this.
Well, it's a lot to take on, and it was shot in Oakland, California, by the Grand Lake Theater, which is an old 1940s theater, beautiful theater, and it's in we shot in live traffic, but we did have Oakland the Oakland police with us. I think we had three officers with us, which is a must when you're
That's
shooting
expensive,
in
though.
traffic. Huh?
That's
What?
expensive, though.
It is expensive. It's not as expensive as San Francisco. No, I'm kidding.
Well, yeah, everything's cheaper in Oakland, right?
Yeah, but I am not. That's the one thing that if I'm gonna if I'm doing independent film, I'm not going to cheat out of his safety, because this, nothing is as important as a person's life, and we've seen it. You know, just in the past few months, we saw it on that trestle back. You know, the past few months with the whole
Alec
incident.
Baldwin.
Yes, exactly. And then also with the trestle back in Georgia. And I've worked in the film industry for many, many years, and I have it's been pressed upon me to be safe, you know. And that is even just even all, the slightest thing of putting an orange vest on when you're in the middle of traffic. And so OPD, Oakland Police, were awesome with us. They held the traffic, but they let the traffic go. Jeremy Stewart, who was our first assistant director, he's an awesome AD, and he knows what to do. He knows how to work with the police. He knows how to let the traffic flow if we need to let the traffic flow. Yes, that was very hard. It's very challenging. And also, I mean, in my day job, I'm a location manager, so
Oh, gotcha.
getting the location, all those logistics stuff like that, that's quite easy. Now, I'm not going to say easy, but it is my job, so I do that, you know. And so this, the directing is the challenge. So I hired my mentor, Jonathan Shedd, who's worked on The Game, Milk. He worked on a lot of, you know, Blue Jasmine, Woody Allen's film, and so he was there to oversee all that type of stuff, which it encapsulates safety as well, you know, so that people aren't stepping out into the street and actually using the crosswalk. You know, I don't want to be the indie film that gets anybody hurt. That's the thing. When I know better, I have to do better. That's the thing.
It's interesting because I was a PA for 2 years before I got out. So the location managers used to be my boss, right? Or the ALM
All
used to be my
right.
boss, right? So yeah. So I understand your world and your stress and everything you go through. So that's so
We
cool that.
appreciate that. Shout out to you, because a lot
Well,
of people don't know.
yeah,
Yeah.
I was a cone and garbage guy, right? So I just did what you told me to do, right? So,
You always leave the location looking better than when you found it. Okay, so that's the motto.
sometimes,
Yeah.
yeah,
We try to. How about
you
that?
try to, yeah. So I do. It's one of those like unsung hero jobs. So that makes total sense how you're able to put this all together. In terms of your, what about your background? How did you get all your background performers?
Well, we worked with the Oakland LGBTQ Community Center and put a shout out through. They have a wonderful partner that they work with called Turnout, and they helped us look for volunteers. I had some people who were left over from some of those people in the marching band are people who were actually at on the No on 8 campaign in 2008.
It's a great
A lot of
scene
those,
when they come because it's like it comes out of nowhere,
I love
right?
it.
No, it's like I said, it's such a cool film in so many ways.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I seriously, I so appreciate it, and I appreciate everybody's words on who gave it coverage on your website as well. Who watched it at your festival.
Yeah, the audience feedback video.
It's exactly. Thank you for giving me those words. But yeah, I think that what was your question there? Sorry.
No, the back getting the back all the background
Oh
performers and
yeah.
everybody, because it's a long day for these people, and there's like I mean, and you're doing, I guess you're doing different locate different costumes and different kinds of setups, I guess, and the four kind of structures you talked about, I guess, right?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of people came from the queer community, the local queer community. My producer Stefano Gonzalez found a lot of the people. Again, there's a lot of those are friends of mine, and We paid them in pizza, which was wonderful, and they did it because they understand what it is. A lot of those people, they understand, practically all of them understand what it feels like to be hated on, and to be discriminated against, and not to not fully be able to love in society the way that we all have a right to fully love people in society and be equal. So a lot of those, a lot, everybody there was there to help with that mission, and that's what I loved about it. It was like our own little protest, and I mean, it came across because I mean, a lot, some people actually who were driving by stopped their cars, got out of their car, and while we were doing our protest, and started yelling at us, and were adamant and told us to get the hell out of their neighborhood because we were being a, the protesters who were playing the religious extremists were being hateful toward the queer community, and they said, "Get out of here if you're not with the queers. We want you out of this community." And it took us a while for them, and I don't even think they even fully got it. The officers had to go up to them and say, "Please get back in your car. This is the film set," because they kept on seeing the all
Sure.
the God hates fags signs and all that.
They were saying it too, right? Like during when you were
Yes,
filming.
exactly. And people were going by, and they were getting confused, which people often do. But the signs, really, we had to watch it because we finally figured out after a few takes, we need to lower the signs when we're not using them so that they don't attract attention that we didn't want.
Okay, but who did those extras? Like who did you get to play those people? Like I'm
Oh,
sure they weren't the like.
those are all background
No,
actors.
that's what I
I
mean,
mean,
but who like I like it's easy to play
oh.
the lovers, the love people, but how did you get convince the people to play the haters?
I didn't tell them that they would be doing
Oh, okay.
that.
I thought you gave them extra
But it was
pictures.
bad. There is a funny story. So, I mean, I have to, I'm going to be, well, who cares? We saw the film. There's a lot of, anti-gay epithets in that. So, I mean, we have to own it. I wanted to give, I wanted, there's, yeah, as you can see at the beginning of the film, there's a lot of anti-gay epithets and slurs, anti-gay slurs. And I wanted to throw it at the audience to show it what it feels like to be hated on. And so when people showed up, the 20 protesters for the religious extremists showed up the morning, I was like, "So you're gonna play the other side that we like to think of, the other side?" And they're like, "Oh, okay." I go, "So what I want you to do, whatever that impetus is that you've got in your ang you know you have for anger, maybe it's the kid you want you who beat you up when you were a little kid, or someone who flipped you off on the way to work today here, or maybe it's Trump, who knows? Who knows?" I go, "Get behind that." And so I said, "So I'm going to start throwing out some names, some anti-gay slurs, and if one appeals to you, just raise your hand and you can have that one." So of course I went down the list, and it was comical, and I'm sure everybody was laughing at it too, because it's just weird to give people lines like, Tinkerbell, or I'm not gonna even say them because I don't want to even repeat them for offending anybody right now.
So this is like such a like it's
But
so
they owned
great.
it. They owned it. All those folks owned it. I thought they did a
Oh,
great job.
and that's what I mean. Like there's like because you're watching the film a couple times, like myself, and there really isn't any false moments going on in the background too. Everything seems genuine, and I'm watching the film like, oh my God, this must have been so hard to do. Like it's impossible. Even I know you start the film in a claustrophobic way where you're like really closed in on everybody, but then you really come out, like you said, in the way you did the structure. And there's so much production value in your filming. How many days did
Thank
you shoot it
you.
for?
We shot it in 2 days.
2 days.
2 days. It was actually originally scheduled for 3. We shot it originally in before the pandemic in 2 days, and then we had to come back and we had to pick it up. We had to pick it up. I think we shot the coverage that we needed for the second scene in 1 day. I mean, it was like probably like 5 hours or something like that. So 2.5 days.
Okay, so I got to ask you a question because you're alluding to your location manager. So if you go to your IMDb, you got a gigantic list of credits. You're the location manager on The Master, which is an underrated, amazing movie from 2012. And so you did this ALM on Moneyball, Contagion. You got this huge, credits. I'm sure you're working on even a show right now. So what does it? So you then you also have done some like short films, like mainly in the last couple of years. So what propels a location manager like yourself? You're obviously doing well in your career. You work with a lot of pretty amazing directors in your own right. Like what motivates you to do these short films? Like are you looking to do a feature eventually or?
Yeah, when I went into this business, I mean, I'm a writer.
Okay.
I'm a writer. I'm an artist. And when I went into this business, I wanted to be a director. And I used, I'm like I said, I come from the theatrical background, and I always wanted to direct a film. And so when I went into the film industry and the TV industry, I said to myself, I'm going to learn what production is all about. I want to be the director who knows what everybody's job is,
Okay.
rather than just like not knowing what people's jobs are, and so I became really good at something which is called location management, and I just kept on working with on some wonderful projects, especially projects like Milk and Fruitvale Station, because they really made change in this world. And that's what I, when I, after the, I don't know, the 33rd film or whatever project that I was on, I was like, I need to start focusing on getting my message out,
Gotcha.
and get back to the road that I wanted to do. And I've been writing all along as I've been working on different projects, and now's the time for me to focus on, getting my message out, getting out what I want to say about this world, what I want to say about life, what I want to say about love, et cetera, And so I've been writing the scripts. I've been writing scripts, for the past upteen years, and I have a script that I'm focusing on right now called Lucky Star. And I have another script called Man Up Above, and I workshopped one of those scripts through the San Francisco film, which was is formerly the San Francisco Film Society. And these four shorts are what do they call that? I can't think of the title. Examples of some of the of aspects of the scripts that I wrote. Like
Okay.
this protest happens in one of the scripts that I wrote.
Okay. So they're almost like
And
proof of concepts in a sense.
yeah, thank you. There we go. It's a proof of concept.
Yeah.
And like Man Up Above, it deals with the protest that happens in the Castro, and it deals with people of color being discriminated against. So I you asked about casting. It
Yeah.
was it was it was it was hand in hand in Kismet for me to cast Cameron, the wonderful Cameron Matthews, in Victor's role. And in another short, Sharks and Minnows, that's about a that I directed in the last 2 years. It's a scene that was taken from Lucky Star, which is my feature script. So I again, like, I wanted to take the knowledge that I have had in the past few years with the industry and in production, and produce and direct something that is going to be a proof of concept for me.
But people don't understand is that as a location manager, you're working like crazy hours, like sometimes 18, 20 hours a day, and you're like, say you're working on a TV show. You're gone for like 8, 9 months, right? Or even in some, if you're going back to back on movies and things like that. So you don't have much time to write or even make these films sometimes. I know you sometimes you probably give yourself a break, but at the same time, even when you give yourself a break, you're so tired and burned out from the filmmaking experience, because that's your day job. It's hard to get back on the horse and make a direct a film and like or write a screen. You know what I mean? Like I You, that's what happens with a lot of people, like key crew members like yourself. It's hard to like go from the mainstream to the independent back and forth. It's like I'm I kudos to you. Like I'm very, I have high respect.
Thank you. Thanks. I appreciate that because the thing is it is all about balance, but it's also about trying to have a life too.
Yeah, that's what I
And
mean. You know what I mean? Because, yeah.
it is when I don't think a lot of people understand or in the industry is that when you commit to something, you really commit to it and you commit your life to it. And there is, I liken it to like when I was doing, I'm an actor too. I used to act, I used to be in musical theater and I used to act in my early 20s and in my 20s. And I liken it to being on a, in a musical. And then afterward, you're doing a musical for a month and a half, 2 months to get it prepped and get it up off the ground. And then you feel that that post depression after it because you've been on such an adrenaline high that and you put all you're all into that piece to get it up off the ground. And then when it afterwards you're like, I'm missing something here. And that's the same thing with film too, is that you give it, I mean, I give it my all. And because I want the piece to shine. I want the director to get what he wants to, what he or she wants to get or they want to get, And so and I do that with my own pieces too. I want to make sure that I get what I want. And again, like so I wrote these four short films that are tethered together. They're based on the elements. It's called Elements, a short film tetralogy. Is that the right word? Yeah, tetralogy. And a group of a quartet of shorts. And they're all tethered together in the same community, much like Kieslowski, Krzysztof Kieslowski. I was inspired by him with the Colors trilogy, Red, White, and Blue, and how Juliette Binoche and Julie Delpy, I believe, that and the other actors that they fall in and out of each other's movie. Just a little cameo. And so all these four shorts, all the main actors, the main protagonist, fall in and out of each other's short. So there was there in this short, Median, Darlene Popovic, who plays lunch lady Shirley in the first short, she's in this one, and she in the crowd scene when the pizzas are delivered. So they're all tethered together. And that was my how I envisioned it 4 years ago. So
Oh,
three years ago.
that's so interesting. So
And
before
then
I
I had to
like,
work in between. So there we are.
so you got obviously you have a couple feet that this feature in you, and I wish you the best of luck to get it made. Before I leave it, because just for the fans and people are interested, because so 2011, you work on Moneyball, Bennett Miller, fantastic filmmaker, and then 2012, you work on The Master, P.T. Anderson, fantastic filmmaker. And then Fruitvale Station, which Ryan Coogler, who really, it's like you don't know, like you, I'm sure maybe you did when you saw his talent, but is turning into be the, one of the most important filmmakers in the mainstream world, at least, that's gonna, now in the future with all the films he's made, the Rocky films, the Marvel film. So you're working on these films, do you get anything from these directors? Like you get like I'm sure they all have their own styles and their ways to run a set, but are you sponging off them for yourself as a filmmaker? Like what's are you just your own guy? Like I'm just curious.
Well, I think that when you work with, it's interesting you say you use the word sponge because I think as an artist you are a sponge. You do absorb people and meaning like you absorb things. That's how we create, and then we have to spit it out to the world, what we've learned or whatever. So I think that I have observed how Ryan, how Ryan conducted his set. I observed how Gus Van Sant conducted his set on Milk,
Milk.
and observed how Paul Thomas Anderson conducted himself on the Master, and I was inspired by it, and by I was inspired by all of them, and I just I don't know what do you mean by a sponge? I should
No,
ask you.
what I mean by sponges is that you see somebody and you're 10 feet away from him and he's running a scene or and something like that, and he's giving you insight. He's giving you like indirect insight
Exactly.
about how to do something.
I can do that, some of that, and meaning like observe things,
Yeah.
but my job there is also
Of
I
course.
it's like people are always like, well, did you get to hang out with,
Yeah, of course.
Philip
I
Seymour
get it.
Hoffman when he was in The Master? I'm like, no, I don't, because that's not my job. And it's like my job there is to make sure the toilets are all got the toilet paper
That's the
and
PA's job. That's not your job. Your job is to
Well,
wipe
it's sometimes, but if you're a good manager, you get in the
the
dirt with the people, The thing is that I have to, yes, I understand that, but I have a job to do, and I do observe, and like I said, I can't help but absorb some of those observations,
Yeah.
and they go into how I'm going to run my set. Like Ryan is a very professional, wonderful, great guy, just a great spirit.
So you're not
And
surprised how the success he's garnered since Fruitvale Station?
not at all. He was when I met him, when we asked me to do the to do Fruitvale Station, and I was just pretty much like, it's my honor, because he's just a great guy.
Yeah.
But I learned how he's just a good person to everybody, and that's how I run my set, is that I'm good. I don't, there are times when you got to work, obviously, but there's also times when you can that that you have fun, and there's also, but we you treat everybody with dignity and
Yeah,
respect, and
because the
that's
reason
why
you because
that's just.
he that's his first feature, right? Fruitvale Station. So he's doing shorts like you're doing shorts, and he's kind of finding his grammar, finding his style, and then he does his first. So you're witnessing someone doing their first feature, and then they go off and they do like Creed, which is an amazing movie, Black Panther, and obviously he's a director in demand, right? So.
Right. Yeah. He is a fantastic person. He's done so much good for the world, and it's a complete honor to have worked with him on Fruitvale Station on his, his first project. And I don't believe he knowing Ryan, he probably knows the impact it was going to have. And I had an inkling of it, but I was all about helping Oakland at that time. Heal from the death of Oscar Grant, because we were grieving here, and the whole and you know but I had no clue how big of a how it would be a catalyst for Black Lives Matter, or just a so whole social justice movement, and that is incredibly it's incredibly it's an incredible gift. And meaning like, and it's incredible honor for me to have been a part of that film.
Yeah, it's a great film. It really is. I hope everybody gets to watch. People get it doesn't get lost in the shuffle, and people actually watch this film. Obviously great performance by an actor who's done well for himself as well, right? So
Michael B. Jordan,
Michael
yeah,
Jordan, yeah.
he's A now. What can I say? What can we say? He's a great guy too.
All right. Well, congratulations on this film. I think it's a fantastic directorial design. Like you said, thank you for talking about the structure, how you kind of piece it together. That fascinates me. And let's talk again when you make your feature. How about that?
All right. Hey, thank you so much for having us, and an incredible honor to be to receive the cinematography award. And I didn't mention, I don't think I said, Sherry Kalk is our cinematographer, and she's an incredible cinematographer to work with, and just wonderful, a wonderful collaborator, just full of love. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
That's so great. Thank you. Thank you very much to Matthew for that wonderful chat out of Oakland, California, which does some great filmmaking, some amazing filmmakers in that area. Well, I'm really appreciate his time to talk about being location manager too in the industry. And it's kind of interesting because he's not in the hub of New York, Los Angeles, Toronto, Vancouver.
which generally seems to be like 90% of the productions that happen. But then I could be a little bit biased with those four cities. But, you know, kind of a in the outside perspective in the Bay Area, of course, there's a lot going on in the Bay Area in terms of post-production, of course. But it's just so interesting to hear the his perspective of working on these productions. Like, it's a really tough job. Being a location manager, and you know, it's very lucrative too if you're good at it, because not many people can be good at it because there's so many logistics involved, but there's some creativity involved too. Like, it's like finding a location that's in inside of the vision of the script or inside of the vision of the director, in finding something that works, and you're working like he was talking about too, you're working with the production designers and making sure that the look of the film coincides. And then of course you make liberties, and then you have to deal with all the logistics of locking down the location and everything around it. And you know, you have like two assistant location managers, and Matthew worked as an assistant location manager, and they kind of handle a lot of the logistical work as the, you know, the location manager is sort of the overseer. It's kind of like the production designer, then they have the art director and the set designer, etc. So it's the same kind of hierarchy in terms of the industry. But really interesting conversation. I could talk to him about location managing for a long time. I think it's very important because I think you can learn stuff, like, because you're taking, you know, these big budgets. Like, you say $10 million is a big budget in your eyes, which is, you know, it's a pretty sizable sum of films. And then you're working on a $10,000 budget to try to make a short film, or even a $1,000 budget to try to make a short film. So for me, from my experiences, that I worked in these mainstream kind of these huge multi-million dollar productions, and sometimes you work on a production and they were spending like $1 million a day on a film and just a day, and then you go to your these little I would work at these co-ops, these film co-ops and independent artistic kind of endeavors in Toronto, and then it would be so different, but it would be the same, and you would try to take what you learned in the mainstream world, because it's kind of like the military. It's like it's a systems go. Everybody's kind of doing their job, and everybody's got their hierarchy, but it's a machine and it works. And you're kind of taking those assets of what you learned in the mainstream and you're kind of putting in an independent film. So it's interesting to hear from Matthew, because he works in the mainstream industry and now he's making short films, which this movie's great. So I hope you get to see it. I hope you enjoy the podcast. I'll see you tomorrow.